Welcome back to the Renaissance Foundation podcast, a podcast about inspiration made by the young people at our youth charity. We support young carers, hospital patients, and at-risk pupils in London. I'm Corey, a member of staff at Renaissance Foundation, and I'll be introducing today's episode. Every year, Renaissance Foundation takes a group of young people to Norway for the Nobel Peace Prize. We learn about the prize's history, bring young people to attend the Nobel ceremony, and for the last 2 years, we've held an event at the UK Ambassador's Residence in Norway. And at that event, we've shared what we've learned with our Norwegian partners. But unfortunately, due to the current global circumstances, it looks like that's not an option for us this year. So we are extremely happy we got the chance to catch up with a very good friend of Renaissance Foundation, the UK ambassador to Norway, Richard Wood. It was really, really nice to hear how he's been carrying on working hard, even though COVID has had an impact on the work he's been doing. But it was really nice to hear how that's been adapted and changed. And also, he shared his career journey with us. And to hear what it was like for him to be working in South Africa with Nelson Mandela was absolutely mind-blowing. He also shared a funny story of us involving the Queen's breakfast, but you'll have to listen right to the end of the podcast to hear that. I'm not going to give that one away, but thanks for sharing that with us, Richard. Thank you so much for speaking with us. We really, really appreciate it. It made us really miss Oslo, but talking to you made us feel a bit closer to Norway, though, we have to admit. And thank you to all the staff at the UK Embassy for making this call possible. Thanks to the hardworking RF staff for planning this session. And most importantly, thanks to the amazing young people for getting involved, joining the call and asking really, really, really good questions. We really appreciate that. So now for everyone at home, what we'd like is if you could just please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, follow on Spotify, rate us 5 stars wherever you can, and just share the podcast with as many people as possible. It really helps us. We're literally making this ourselves while not even going into the office, while in isolation and stuff. So every share, every listen makes a big, big difference to us. We really appreciate it. If you want to find out how to donate to RF, head over to renaissance-foundation.com. Every donation makes a massive difference to a small charity like us in these really uncertain times. I'm not going to hold you anymore. Let's just jump straight into the episode. And you'll hear first from our host, Nisha.
So our speaker today is Ambassador Richard Wood, and he's the British Ambassador to Norway, and he's been the British Ambassador since 2018. He's had a really long and incredible career in the Foreign Office, and some of you have actually already met him. So thank you to the Ambassador for joining us. Let's quickly go around and do our introductions. We've got a new bit to it here. We're going to add our pronouns, so I can start, and don't forget to nominate the next person. So hi everyone, I'm Nisha, and my preferred pronouns are she and her, and one of my passions is tie-dyeing, and the person that I'm going to nominate next is Sat.
Hi, my name's Sat, my age is the other side of 30, preferred pronouns that he, passion, I'm an Arsenal fan, and I'm finally happy because we actually won something at the weekend, so I'm really happy about that. And I wanted to say a big thank you to Ambassador Wood and your team for kindly joining us today. We're really pleased to catch up with you. We've been following a lot of your posts as well, sort of over the last few weeks and months in particular as well. And it's been really helpful actually to see some of the things and updates you've been doing. And we really appreciate you kindly supporting us again to make time to speak with us all, really. And we're missing Oslo, really. So, thanks for kindly making time today. Really appreciate it. And then I will probably nominate Wahid, who's next.
I'm 23. I was a young person, a young leader with Renaissance Foundation since 2012, which is when I first joined. I went through the personal development program, and I now volunteer when I can. Currently, what I'm doing is working in finance at a fintech startup in London. And since the COVID lockdown and that kind of thing, I've been working from home. And they're even saying now we're going to be working from home for the rest of the year. So, yeah, pros and cons to it. Still getting used to it. But, yeah, it's going good so far. Do you want me to nominate? I'll nominate Corey.
Oh, perfect. Well, I was going to say, I bet you're loving not having to sit on the district line for about
an hour. Yeah, it's packed like sardines. Yeah.
Oh, well, thanks for sharing that. My name's Corey. I'm 18 plus 10 years. My preferred pronouns are he, him, and they. I'm pretty open with that. And I'm passionate about learning and helping others, and that's what I really like about going to Oslo, to Norway each year. It's not just about experiencing a new place and culture, it's about learning how people have used a platform to help people around the world. So I'm really passionate about learning about the Nobel Peace Prize and helping others. And I would like to nominate next Nyla.
Hi everyone, my name is Nyla. I'm 17 years old. My preferred pronouns are she, her. My passion actually is politics, and I really am interested in how different nations around the world have formed over time and how they've developed. And the next person I will nominate is, I don't know, Amani, Professor Janine Wright.
Yeah, you got that right. And so I'm Amani, I am 25. My preferred pronouns are she, her. And my current passion is my tomato plant, actually. It's just started sprouting. So, yeah, I'll nominate Ananya to go next.
Hi, everyone. I'm 20 years old. I'm currently studying history and economics at university. So my pronouns are she, her. And something I'm passionate about is a social enterprise. So I've been working on one in Uganda remotely for the part this summer. I've really enjoyed that, and I'm really interested in Norway's approach to sustainable business and like the ESG focus of Norway as a whole, so it'd be interesting to hear more about that. Oh, and I'd like to nominate Rafe.
And feel free to type your answer in the chat, Rafe, if you don't want to go on the mic. So just while Rafe's answering, Ananya, would you like to nominate someone else as well?
Yeah, sure. I'd like to nominate Courtney to go next.
Hi, my name is Courtney. I'm 18. My preferred pronouns, I guess, is he and they, I guess. And what is it? My passions right now is just gaming.
Courtney, do you want to nominate someone else?
Okay. Rachel?
Hi, my name's Rachel. And I'm passionate about singing and working with all the young people. We've been doing a great music project at the moment, which has been incredible. Really excited for you to kind of be here with us. It's great that you're here, and yeah, just looking forward to this podcast. And I will nominate Ose.
Oh, hi. I'm Ose. I'm 16. You can go she, her. My passion is all over the place. So like sciences, sewing, art, cooking. Yeah. Anything else? Oh, who has it gone? Makaya? Has they gone?
Hi, my name is Makaya. I'm 16. And my preferred pronouns are she and her. And I'm passionate about, well, there's two different, but science and music. And I would like to nominate Catherine.
Cool. So I'm Catherine. I work at the British Embassy with the Ambassador. I am mid-30s. Preferred pronouns are she, her. I have a passion about travelling and learning new things. Looking forward to this podcast as well. Do you want me to nominate someone?
Yeah, is there any of the young people who haven't had a chance to go? I'm not sure. Corey, Amani.
Shafi, I think. Shafi hasn't.
Yeah.
Just Shafi and Rafe in the chat as well.
Yeah.
So Rafe's answered as well because he typed his answer earlier. And thanks for sharing that, Catherine. That's really nice. Thanks for joining today. Rafe has put, my name is Rafe, I'm 14. My pronouns are he/his, and I'm passionate about playing piano. So thanks for sharing that, Rafe. Would you like to go, Shafi, as well, or do you want to write it down? Oh, he's put it in the chat. He's put, hi, guys, my name is Shafi. He says he put, his preferred pronouns are he and him. His passions are reading and photography, and he likes travelling too. And I think he's missed off, like, fine dining. I remember Shafi likes food. Thanks for writing that. Yeah, can't forget food. I thought so. Thanks for sharing that, Shafi. And thanks for everyone for introducing yourselves. It's really helpful for the chat, so we all know something we're interested in, and helps us with the conversation today, because we're really, really lucky to be joined by Ambassador Richard Wood. So maybe, Nisha, would you like to introduce Ambassador Richard Wood?
Yeah, I'll actually leave this up for Ambassador Wood. Would you like to kind of use this same format as well, maybe, to introduce yourself?
Sure. Yeah, my name is Richard. I'll tell you. 52. Preferred pronouns, he, him. Have lots of passions. In work, I think it's equality and social inclusion that I get most excited about. In private life, in Norway, you have to go hiking and outdoors life. So lots of things to keep me busy. And somebody also said, I think, photography, which I would love to get into, but I'm not really very good at. So there's something for the future, perhaps.
Amazing. Thank you. And thank you for coming on and speaking to us today. I know, so can we perhaps get a little bit of background about what an ambassador actually does? Because I think we all know the name, but yeah, we probably don't know all the hard work that goes behind it.
Right, let's start with that. I think the kind of ambassador that a lot of people are used to is a kind of brand ambassador. You see that all the time on Instagram and social media. And if you think about what they do, they represent the brand. They are supposed to present why it is such a good brand, all of the good points, to try and get people talking about that brand. And in a sense, that's what this kind of ambassador does as well. I'm just an ambassador for a country rather than a brand. So I'm in Norway trying to talk to Norwegian government, Norwegian business, all kinds of people in Norwegian society about the UK, to get them talking, to get them making links, to get them cooperating with the UK, and to get them to understand a little more about British people, British politics, British sport, all kinds of things. So that's, I think, the best way to think about it. No 2 days are ever the same in my job. One day you're dealing with coronavirus on a cruise ship. The next day you're trying to organize military joint exercises in the Arctic. And the following day, you might be opening a museum that has a special link between Norway and the UK. So really varied, but basically anything that is UK interests in Norway, that's what we're about, and that's what we're trying to promote.
Amazing. Thank you. And can we start a little bit also hearing about your career journey and how you got to the point that you are today?
Yeah, I didn't know what I wanted to do when I left school, and I went to a polytechnic. They don't exist anymore, but basically it's like a bit like a university. Then I was studying German and European politics, and then I went to work for the German Parliament and thought, you know, I quite like this international stuff. Maybe I'd quite like to do that for a career. So I applied for a job in the Foreign Office, and that was the first job that I applied for and the only job I've ever had. And that was about 30 years ago. So I've been doing this a long time and all of my working life. The great thing about our job is that you get to move around between different countries and experience different cultures and see different things and work with different issues all the time. So I've been a human rights negotiator at the United Nations in New York. I have been a British Consul General in South Africa, in Cape Town, dealing with all the issues there. I was in Iraq for a year, dealing with relations with the south of Iraq, trying to rebuild the country and encourage British businesses and companies and organizations to partner with Iraq and to rebuild the country after a very long period of conflict. So you can see that it's really, really varied. Not a lot of rebuilding from conflict in Norway. Here it's all about energy. I don't know if you knew, but about 40% of our energy in the UK comes from Norway. So we talk to Norway and the energy companies about the green shift, we call it, trying to make our energy supply greener, a lot more renewable energy, a lot more wind power, and looking forward even further than that to hydrogen power, which is ultra clean. And meanwhile, we need, until we achieve that, we need gas and oil, hopefully in ever smaller amounts. But until we achieve full renewable energy, it's about ensuring that the UK gets all the energy and electricity it needs. We have these statistics about how many billions of cups of tea in UK are brewed every year with Norwegian electricity. So that's one thing that we do, but it is very, very varied here.
Amazing. And I know so many of our young people will have a ton of questions about sustainability and energy for you, which we can get to in the Q&A session. I'm just going to give you one more question, then we can actually open it up to that Q&A session. But I wanted to know what you've been up to during this COVID-19 period, because obviously things have changed massively. And as an ambassador, it must have absolutely changed your work and everything that you do.
Yes, I'm doing a lot more of this, video meetings. We don't use Zoom, so forgive me if I press the wrong button now and then. We use a different video app, but we're doing a lot more of that. And it's very difficult for diplomats because our job is about contact with people, right? I mean, what we try and do is put people together, to meet people, to influence, to listen. And that's been really quite difficult in the last few months. So we're having to adapt to lots of different new ways of doing things. Actually, when the crisis first started, I was taken off Norway work and I was leading a piece of work trying to get British citizens who were stranded overseas to get them back to the UK. I don't know if you saw all of those efforts, people who were on holiday in Peru or Bali or Australia. They needed to come home, but all the flights had stopped, or many of them had stopped. And so I was leading some work to try and get them home. 1.3 million people, British people, were overseas at the time that COVID struck and lockdown came, and we had to get them all home. So we were talking to the airlines about keeping routes open, about cooperating with each other, about bunching up flights so that we could carry on flying people home. And the Foreign Office, believe it or not, even chartered 180 flights to bring people from places that were difficult to get home from. So I was doing that for about 2 to 3 months, I think, a couple of months at least. And that was pretty hard work. But it was interesting because my team was sitting in Bolivia, in Vancouver, in Beirut, and in London, and obviously me in Oslo. And so we're all finding that, you know, life is a bit new for us and that we're doing things differently. And of course, that's the same for everybody's life. Everything that we are used to doing, we've had to either find new ways of doing or be able to live without. And that's actually quite difficult. So one of the things that I'm really conscious of is the mental strain on people of this period. So some people are in our job are living in flats with flatmates, trying to work from home, sharing bandwidth and computers and back bedrooms as studies and what have you. And other people are sitting on their own in their places, and that can have a different kind of effect. So one thing that I've really been aware of during this whole crisis is the effect on people, individual people, and not assuming that my experience is the same as other people's experience. My husband is stuck in France with our dog and our car, and I'm here on my own. But I know that my experience is not the same as everybody else's. So I think in a way, I hope that what one of the things that it's done is to make people more aware of other people's situations and to take account of that and to be kind and think about other people. In my messaging that you mentioned early on in the crisis, I was trying to emphasize that people should take care of others in the wider community. If you know that an old person who lives down the street and is frightened to go out and go shopping, you know, ask them if you can help them out. Or if you're aware that somebody is isolated on their own, just give them a call. So I think that I hope that what this has done is to make people think a little more about community and about exclusion, and to get people to include a bit more. So I think that's really important. So yeah, that's what I've been doing during this whole crisis. Now we're at a stage where the infection rate in Norway is very low. It hasn't been particularly hard hit, and we are trying at least to get back on to business as usual, at least the kind of business we were doing. As I said, I hope we're all going to do it in a slightly different way and take more account of social inclusion, but to nevertheless get back to the kind of work that London expects us, the ministry expects us to be doing.
Thank you. I think that's a really important message to hear and a really good one as well. So I'd like to open it up for Q&As. Feel free to just unmute yourselves and ask a question. If anyone's feeling shy, I can always ask the first question.
I wanted to ask, what's your wild experience as ambassador?
So you have to say that again. You just broke up a bit. Sorry.
Oh, what's your wildest experience as
ambassador? Wildest experience. Curtis, that is a really difficult question. I get to do some really strange things and lots of really, really interesting things, I have to say. So one of the wildest things I think I haven't done yet, but I'm really looking forward to doing, and that is that the head of the Norwegian Navy wanted to sail me to near to the North Pole, to a place called Svalbard, which belongs to Norway, in a Navy ship, and go and visit a weather station and a research place. And if you've read about Svalbard, it's really quite interesting because there's a little place underground because it's permanently ice. And they've built a place underground in the permafrost, they call it, where it's always cold, where they've saved one of every seed in the world from every plant in the world. And they call it a seed bank, so that if stuff dies out, they've got the, I don't know what they call it, genetic material, I suppose, to bring plants back from extinction. So I'm really excited. I think that would be crazy to visit that place, go down into a vault under the ice and visit all of these seeds that are saved. But no, the job is really, really varied. I've been on ships. I've been given weird food to eat that you can't turn down. I've spoken to presidents and the Queen, and so it's really a huge privilege to be able to do the job. And when I get sent to do something that's actually quite boring but important, then I have to remember that most of the time I'm doing really, really, really interesting stuff. Thanks for the question. That was really good.
That sounds so cool. Like an ice vault of seeds underground.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it?
Who wants to go next? Yeah?
So I have two questions. One is, I suppose the first is slightly more personal, and I wanted to know whether there's anybody that you've met that has sort of disappointed you, because I imagine you've met a lot of very famous people and very interesting ones. And the second question is, I'm quite interested in the like energy industry, and I was wondering what kind of effect the sort of green stimulus plan and the green bonds from the from Europe has had on the Norwegian energy industry.
Good. Well, let me start with energy, and you may have to remind me of the other one because I've got a very short memory. But on energy, I think, you know, I am really passionate about the environmental agenda in Norway and what we can do together, because we're two countries that feel the same way about the future of the planet and the environment. And yet we are really advanced in different areas. So we see a real possibility for us to come together as UK and Norway and do some really important stuff around the environment conference at COP26 and around also around everyday issues that are simply going to make the world a more sustainable place. I don't think green bonds is enough. I think the whole system of financing and investment needs to be made more sustainable. So funnily enough, next week I'm doing a web event on green financing in Norway, which is really to tell companies that they need to report their sustainability figures in every aspect of what they do. And they can be rewarded for good performance in certain areas. And there can be cheaper finance and all kinds of things that we can do to make more money available to those companies that perform best in sustainability. So really, really important. But the main work on green issues, if you like, is around energy, where I've visited carbon capture and storage plants and talked to companies about partnering on hydrogen production and injecting carbon back under the sea and all kinds of really interesting stuff that's going to revolutionize our energy in the years ahead, probably from around 2050. So I may be long gone, but maybe this is my my contribution to the future generations is trying to help move this stuff along a bit. And the other question was about who's been the most impressive famous person or something like that?
Well, I was wondering whether you'd met someone that had sort of disappointed you and was someone that didn't quite fit their public image, rather.
Goodness, I think that would be a bit indiscreet, wouldn't it? And we are recording this, so I probably should be a bit careful. I'd rather turn it around and say somebody who was just like you imagine them and really, really impressive. Can I do that instead? And that was Nelson Mandela. I was in South Africa from 1993 to 1998, I think, something like that. And my first job was to join Nelson Mandela's election campaign and travel around the country with him and go to election rallies and all of that in South Africa, which was still apartheid South Africa in those days, but was transforming into this new rainbow nation they were trying to create. And he was 24 hours a day, exactly as you see him in video footage, just incredibly charismatic and caring about people and just really, really inspirational. And they always say that you know a great statesman or a great person by the fact that if they walked into a room behind you, you would feel it, right? You get this kind of frisson, this charisma that has walked into the room, this big persona. And he was definitely like that. Wherever he went, people wanted to do what it was that he was saying. And there aren't many people around like that, if you think about it. So it was a huge privilege to get to know him a little bit and to be able to work in South Africa at that time. And given that I'm talking about things that I'm super impressed by, it would be disappointing now if I talked about people I was disappointed by, so I will skip that question diplomatically, if that's okay.
Amazing, thank you. Anyone else have a question? I have a question. Oh yeah, sorry, go on, Wahid.
Yeah, so I guess my question is more on when things like COVID happen, you know, you can't, it's something you just don't expect. It comes out of the blue, you know, things like this, it's like a once in a lifetime kind of thing. How do you kind of approach this sort of problem when it comes out of the blue and no one's expecting it? How do you kind of approach the multiple problems and things that come with it, like, you know, all the shifting and change and how people have to adapt to the circumstances.
That is a really goodness, we could talk for hours about that. The first thing is we do a lot of crisis training, so that any kind of crisis that could happen in Norway, that we would be ready with the immediate steps and not have to spend time thinking about how we're going to organize ourselves and the kinds of reports we need to send back and who we need to talk to and who does what. We train for all of that so that we can snap into action, if you like, and just start doing what we need to do. And the thing that we train for most often is, for example, if a cruise ship were going to sink or get damaged in the north of Norway, how would we react to that? So we all know in the embassy what our role is in a crisis, so we practice that. Some people are responsible for bringing together all the information and logging information. Some people are responsible for what we say publicly. Some people are responsible for liaising with London. So we all know what our roles are. And I think you can apply that kind of thinking also to this kind of issue that has come up in the last few months, because what crisis training teaches you is a little bit resilience, to know that things are going to come at you that are unexpected, and that if you are calm and logical and methodical and you can rely on support from people around you and you know what role it is that you want to try and achieve, then you know, no problem is completely insurmountable and you can deal with these kinds of things that come along. So I think our job in a way is really, really good training for this kind of situation, because we're really drilled in how to cope with the unexpected. And I think everyone can do it. Everyone can think about the ways in which unexpected events affect them and the best way that you can react to those. A way of reacting which is actually going to change events or make you feel better or make a positive contribution, rather than getting anxious and inward looking and the situation just becoming worse. So I actually think that our job prepares us for the unexpected quite well. I think took it in our stride pretty well. We realized that more things were coming down the track and that we'd have to react as we went along and be resilient and reactive. So, yeah, I'm quite proud of our people and how they've reacted to the crisis, because I think they've done it really well. But I think there are also lessons there for individual people in daily life about how you can approach crisis and how you can be logical and methodical and get through it.
Cool, thank you.
Naila, I think you had a question as well, right?
Yes, I did. I thought there was noise outside my room, so I was like, should I say something? Okay. So I have two questions. I'm going to start with my first one, and that is, what do you love most about your job?
What do I love about my job? I love the fact that it just brings me into contact with such a diverse range of people. Not just, you know, the famous people like Mandela and the Queen and, you know, all of those, but actually people from all walks of life and all kinds of different situations. Because I think that this maybe sounds a bit like a cliche, but in our job, you definitely learn that everybody has something interesting about them. It can be hard to see immediately what that is sometimes, or it can be hard to coax out. But sometimes that's a challenge when I go to boring functions, is to talk to someone and find out what is the really interesting thing about them. And sometimes that can be really unexpected. You can learn amazing things from people that you least expect. So that is what I love, that although I'm an introvert, the job structure allows me to get a glimpse of what life would be like if I were an extrovert, and I can be forced to talk to people and find out the best of them. That's what I really love.
And my second question is, what has been the most life-changing moment that you've experienced from your job?
Life-changing. Goodness. I met my husband in the job, so that was pretty life-changing. When I was in New York, I met my husband in New York. That, in a sense, I think is it, to be open to new experiences and go anywhere and any place in life in any situation and just be open to great stuff happening to you. That, I think, has stood me in good stead, because in my very first job in South Africa, when I was on this election campaign, the ambassador was this crusty old guy who, you know, I thought, God, I'll never be like him. He said to me, he said, "No, Richard, this is probably going to be the greatest day of your professional career. It's all downhill from here." That was 30 years ago. So I was thinking to myself, goodness, I hope it stays interesting. But what he meant was, I think, that because I'd persuaded him to go to Nelson Mandela's victory party in Johannesburg, and it was just this joyous occasion. And I think he was feeling that because he'd opened himself up to new experiences, that he was experiencing something incredible and new. So that whole period was an amazing part of my life. I met my husband, and I've done great jobs in New York and Iraq and in Washington. And what I want to keep is open to experiencing fantastic things.
Thank you. That all sounds very lovely.
Does anyone else have a question?
Thank you, Ambassador Wood. It's been really interesting hearing a lot of the stories.
After all this time, you've really got to call me Richard.
But, thanks. And I was thinking, Richard, one of the things that comes across from a lot of your career is about kind of building bridges, from the different things you said about New York. And I think a lot of young people on the call and some of them listening are probably a bit worried about things going on in the world, sort of both locally and then maybe in their community, and also kind of globally with, you know, election and politics globally feels like things are pulling people apart and separating people. And I was just wondering, sort of, especially from your time sort of in South Africa, where you might have seen things that seem insurmountable or you know, really massive challenges and stuff, like, what would your advice be for us both as, you know, young people who just wanted to study, but also about, you know, how change can happen, how you can, you know, be part of change, and also, like, yeah, if you've got any tips about, because it can be a bit disheartening, but I guess it took quite a long time sort of for even Nelson Mandela to kind of make change and stuff, you know?
Yeah, no, that is a really, really important thing, because I see with social media and even with TV media that it's becoming a lot, really quite aggressive in the world. So you can apply this at all levels. It's not just world politics, but it's right down to community politics and community relations and even how we react with our to our neighbours and our flatmates. And because it all boils down to one thing for me, and that is respect. I think what we're lacking a little bit these days is respect for other people's views and respect for other people in general. And I think that's incredibly sad. And I think if each of us as an individual contributes to showing that we respect people around us, we respect people with other views, and we respect other cultures and other countries, then even if you can only spread that to one other person and demonstrate why that's important, then the world would be, frankly, a much better place. Because it is really intolerance that fuels a lot of nastiness and aggressivity in the world. And, you know, we know that from our communities. We see that around us. And exactly the same principle applies to countries. If countries are aggressive and don't respect other people's, other countries' views, then, you know, exactly the same can happen at that level. And I think I really thought about this the first time that I was, when I was working in New York as a negotiator on human rights. And I worked out after a very short period of time that you can't win in a negotiation unless you are prepared to listen to other people, understand what it is that they need and want from a negotiation, and to show that you're addressing that. You may not be able to agree with all of their demands, but if you show respect for what they are trying to do and what they're trying to achieve, you've got a much, much better chance of reaching some common ground and some agreement. And I saw time and again that some negotiators from other countries would come in and bang on the table and say, this is what I want. And that automatically makes you think, well, I don't want to give it to you. If nobody wants to establish common ground with you, then you are much less likely to compromise and come to an agreement. So I think it all starts with respect and kindness, actually.
We appreciate it.
Thank you. Any other questions? If not, I have a few. I was wondering, we've got a few young people who are interested in diplomacy and they kind of want to go into the Foreign Office. What advice would you give them? Is there anything that they can start doing from now to kind of, show their interest and help them in their kind of future career journey?
Yeah, there's two things I would say. I mean, thankfully, the Foreign Office is not a career where you need to have studied certain things to be able to join. It's not like being a pilot where you need to have good eyesight, because I don't, and physics and maths and all that stuff. It isn't that at all. Thankfully, we take people from all kinds of disciplines, if you like, who've studied all kinds of different things. So we have architects and we have geologists and physicists and mathematicians and language experts, and everybody is welcome. So, what is it that they're looking for? I think what it is the ability to engage and talk to people, right? It may sound quite easy. We all talk to people, but can we talk to people in a empathetic way, which understands and takes account of the way that they feel? Can we talk to people in a way that influences them to think what we think? Can you construct and win an argument? I don't mean an argument as in a kind of quarrel. I mean an argument as in a way of persuading someone. So it's much more about having an interest in international affairs and having a curious and engaging way of showing that. So I would just encourage people to stay interested in current affairs, think about some of these issues that are going on behind the headlines, like what's happening on social media, where's this aggressivity coming from, how do we address world issues, and also to just think about how it is that you interact with other people. Try and gain a little bit of confidence. As an introvert, when I started, I was not really very confident with engaging other people. And that's something that I've had to think about and learn. My development journey has been a very long one, and a steep learning curve in many areas. So it's constantly being curious about the world and curious about yourself and self-aware. How is it that I come across to other people? How would I best go about persuading other people and engaging other people and talking to other people? So those two things, the awareness and the curiosity, I think are really, really good preparations for a job like ours that doesn't have formal qualifications that you need to join.
Thank you. It sounds like being introverted was a bit of a challenge for you to overcome. I was wondering if you have any other challenges that you've had to overcome, and how have you overcome them?
Yeah, I think that, what I would say about that is we probably all carry some baggage around with us, right? Some of that is created by circumstance around us. stuff that we can't do anything about, whether that's illness or family circumstance or, I don't know, many other things in life can cause those kinds of circumstances. But so a lot of it is self-inflicted, I think. And for me, it was definitely self-inflicted. I wasn't very confident, and I was introverted, and it was very hard to overcome that. And for me, the circumstance that I think caused that was that I had trouble growing up as a gay person. I didn't want to be a gay person. I thought that was a terrible life that I was going to have to lead. And so I created this set of circumstances for myself where I told myself that this was a terrible thing to be. Obviously, if you do that, you start to make it come true. It does become a terrible thing to be because it becomes a mental burden on you. So I think that I needed to find, and I knew I needed to find a way to get around that, to develop confidence. I think that this is about, this is why I'm so passionate about inclusion and kindness and those kinds of things, because if you find yourself in that kind of anxiety-ridden, isolated place, that is what you really need, people that you can rely on, who can support you, and who you instinctively know just love you for who you are, and will always try and help you when you're feeling down or stuff gets difficult. So I probably had to overcome that challenge before I was going to be able to function in life generally. And that was very difficult, but I did look for people around me who I knew that I could rely on and who would be loving and kind and help me to process stuff. So, yeah, I think that's always really, really difficult in life, is to understand that they're, and to give trust to those people around us who can actually rely on and who will help. So we all have different circumstances, but I think there are some common factors for helping yourself and getting other people to help you to get over that. I'm always amazed how many kind people there are around who are willing to help you and willing to drop stuff and give you support, and who have some kind of expertise that is really, really helpful. And I now know that if I find that, then, you know, it's not an embarrassing thing to accept it and come to rely on it.
Some great advice. Thank you. Does anyone else have a question? Yeah, Corey?
Oh, I've got a question. Just bear a moment. I've been practicing. Okay, one moment. Hugle or Sidai Ian? I don't know.
Sorry, also.
Oh, you understood it. Good. So it's nice to see you again. Tusen takk for making this call. And coming off the back of the point you just made, which is really powerful and really nice of you to share that, I was wondering, you know, a big part of RF is inspiration and looking up to people who have achieved and inspire us. So when you were growing up, who inspired you? Or even more recently, coming through the challenges we've faced globally, has anyone been inspiring you at the moment?
So I think that I'm not one who looks at one person to say that is my inspiration, because for me that takes away what I need, which is to show that all individuals have something within them which is stuff that we can admire. So what I have always done, not consciously, but just the way my mind works, I think, is to admire qualities, individual qualities in different people. So I have fantastic friends who are loving and kind. I have a husband who's very generous, and that inspires me. And I have colleagues who are really committed, and that inspires me. So I'm going to disappoint you and say there isn't one person who has been my kind of main inspiration. I am inspired by where I see really impressive qualities in other people.
Thank you. I think that's a really good answer. Like when we have workshops, I think a lot of people talk about family members inspiring them. And then also you have, you know, worked with Nelson Mandela. So I guess that's ticked off a box for a lot of people. Thank you.
I think Ananya has a question as well.
I remember you mentioned that you worked in New York, which is really cool, exciting. I was wondering what your experience was relative to working in the UK, and what perhaps culture-wise, or like what kind of work opportunities. It'd be interesting to hear your take on it.
Yeah, it's very interesting because in our job, I mean, the best thing and the worst thing is that we have to move every few years. It's the best thing because we get to go somewhere else and experience something new. It's the worst thing because you have to leave friends behind and your house behind and your job behind and just almost be cast adrift into a completely new situation. But that what that has done for me is made me the kind of place that wherever I happen to be, that's just home. So I can feel at home almost anywhere. And particularly if I'm placed somewhere for a year or 2 years or 3 years, for me, I quite easily find that home. And then you can accept all the bits of local culture that are both good and bad and strange and familiar, and just accept them as that's where you live and that's the culture that you live in. So going to New York, I came to love the fact that, you know, the place is just buzzing and crazy 24 hours a day, that if you fancy a pizza, you can go and get one at 4 o'clock in the morning, or that there's so many people crowded into a small area. That was where I lived, and that's how it was, and then I came to enjoy that. In Iraq, I lived in a trailer, half a trailer, in fact, in the desert, in a hangar with no windows, but that was my home, and I accepted that for what it was, and it taught me a lot about myself because I was locked up with myself for many hours a day. So I think that what the job has taught me is that kind of wherever I am is home, and there's good stuff and bad stuff wherever you go. And if you're open to shrugging your shoulders and saying, well, that's just the way they do stuff here, then I think that is a really good way to see and accept and understand other cultures.
Thank you. It's really insightful.
Does anyone want to ask the final question? If not, I know Sat has a question, but if any of the young people have one, I'm going to take that as a no. Final chance. Okay, Sat, all yours.
Cool. So, Richard, thanks so much for making time today. We really appreciate it. We know you've got a busy schedule with everything that's going on, so we really appreciate it. And I think your story is exactly the kind of one that inspires young people to show, even if you don't, you know what you're going to do when you're younger, growing up, it's still okay. And yeah, you've given us a lot of tips to get into the Foreign Office as well. So really appreciate it. And on a personal note as well, like, you've been so open and supportive to us at Renaissance Foundation. You've welcomed us to your very cool house in Oslo, probably the coolest, I would say. And we really appreciate it. It really means a lot to us. And then on the calls, we always try to leave on a funny story. So we were just wondering. So we had one of President Obama's main advisors sort of tell us a bit of a secret story about the presidential Jeep and how President Obama used to play a lot of loud hip hop music in the back and stuff. We were just wondering, in your course of working with the ambassadors and the Queen and stuff like that, have you got any ones that you're allowed to tell us, but any kind of funny stories or something that would surprise us that we wouldn't know about?
Goodness, I actually have loads. In a career like this, you collect funny stories. I think one of the funniest is, I don't know if I'm allowed to tell this, maybe I am. I think she would forgive me. I once ate the Queen's breakfast by mistake. That was when she visited South Africa. I was working at the embassy, and we were all, the ambassador was kind of panicking and said, you all have to be at the embassy at 5 a.m. and to do any jobs that need doing. And so I was ironing the newspaper, which apparently is something you have to do. and lugging boxes around and luggage. And by 7 a.m., I was really famished and tired. And the Queen's footman brought into the room where we were in the ambassador's residence, a toast rack. Me and another guy ate what was on the toast rack. And I'll edit it because it was a bit rude, but he came back in and he said, "Who's eaten the flipping Queen's flipping breakfast?" And, you know, we have crumbs around our mouths. "I don't know. We've just arrived." That's the first time I've admitted that, actually. So, I once ate the Queen's breakfast by mistake.
That's a cool story. I think she would let you off with that one, you know.
He made her some more, so she did get her breakfast.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Ambassador Wood, for taking time out to come speak to us and being so open and honest and giving such good advice. Can we all take ourselves off mute and give a round of applause for Ambassador Wood, please?
Thank you. Well, listen, it's been great to see you all. I hope we can do another session where I get to hear some of your experiences and we can have a conversation. I think that would also be quite nice, because I'd like to hear some of your circumstances and how Renaissance is helping all of you to address that, because I know it does fantastic work, and that's why I'm always happy to speak to you guys. So let me know whenever I can help.
We'd love that. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sat, did you want to say anything, or? If not, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say a big, really big thank you to Richard for that, and for, you know, really inspiring us. And like I said, you know, your support has really helped us to move our Nobel Peace Prize visit every year forward. So we're going to miss probably not being able to see you this year, but just wanted to say, yeah, big thank you for all your support over the years. And for
maybe I'll live stream it so you can see it anyway.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. I'm going to try and send you some Cadbury's chocolates. We'll do it in the post.
Great to see you. Bye, all.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to that whole episode. That was an absolutely wonderful chat. Like, it just covered so many different topics, and we really appreciate you making the time to talk to us, Richard, talking about your career journey, giving out advice for young people overcoming challenges, and even sharing, like you said, the qualities that inspire you in different people and why that's important. I think that's a really good lesson that we could learn from that. So basically, thank you for helping us through this difficult time and giving us some positivity. That means a lot. And we really gutted we're not going to get to see you this year, but if we can keep up conversations like this online, I think that will be the next best thing. And at least that way we can share it with the amazing listeners at home. Thank you everyone for listening to the whole episode. Like I said at the top of the episode, if you really like this, it would make a big difference to us if you just subscribe to us, if you rated it 5 stars, and if you shared it, and also just getting in touch. You can find us on Renaissance Foundation on Instagram, Renaissance Charity on YouTube, and also on our websites, renaissance-foundation.com. Just let us know what you're thinking of the podcast. All feedback is good feedback for us at the moment. So thank you.